Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's Tour Catch-Up,
Jannik Sinner takes the Rotterdam crown.
Iga Świątek three-peats the Doha title.
And Tennis Weekly reports from the Golden Swing.
Kim, Chris, today is the 19th of February and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. Well, we're not really catching up because tennis is still going on from last week due to the shocking weather yesterday in Delray Beach. We're having a Monday final there, so we can't really look back on all the tennis, but I am hoping by the time we talk about Delray Beach, maybe Taylor Fritz has won the title.
So is he winning? Or are you just supporting him?
I think he's a set and three all. So I'm hoping, for the sake of the podcast and kind of absoluteness,
we do want to be able to catch up on last week, even though last week is still happening right now.
I do feel sorry for the ticket holders from yesterday, though, because they didn't get a refund, even though the match was, you know, obviously rained off, terrible weather out there, and they've had to reschedule it for today. If anyone's listening who was at the final, they get a good match, though, seeing all the sort of hassle of, you know, not being able to do it yesterday.
I would be remote working on Monday, I think, to get down to that match, because it's pretty tasty final, I think.
Well, would you be wearing a big hat to cover yourself just in case someone saw that you weren't at work?
Face mask as well.
And, yeah, sunny's on.
Maybe strategically look at where the TV cameras are and sit behind them, perhaps.
So you,
I hope your
on
boss
court.
Isn't listening to this, Joel, I have to say. They might think, oh, are you going to use those tactics tournament somewhere?
Yes, Kim, I'm going to fly over from London to Delray Beach and hope
it's
they
a hypothetical.
Well, talking of Delray Beach and, disguising yourself, there was a lady on the court sitting down who did look like she was trying to cover her face. There was a photo during the rounds. It looks a bit like she's got a lampshade on her head.
She should be at work.
Maybe that's what it was all about.
Maybe that is. Yeah, but to me, she looks like, it's like Daft Punk, like type.
Yes. What was she doing there,
mask?
Joel?
Well, it was quite interesting. I mean, Delray Beach, they have cars on the tennis court, which I'm not a fan of because I think BMW is one of their sponsors. But on the other side, in the other corner, they've got some lounge chairs on the tennis court. And these are basically your kind of VIP hospitality seating, literally on the tennis court at court level. I don't know about you guys. I was just like, I'd just be worried if I'm going to get hit in the face with a racket.
Yeah, it's a bit like a chally kind of level where you normally just get a fold up seat and
bring
sit
your
inside.
Own chair.
Yeah. But you sort of do that at your peril of getting hit in the face by a big serve that booms, you know, wide. So I'm not sure that's VIP in my book.
Well, I've got a question for you because this did go do the rounds on Twitter. If you were in the BMW, would you sit on the passenger side or the driver's side? Because someone's going to have to sit further away from the court. So if you got a pair of tickets, you'd say, right, sorry, I'm taking the good side. And I probably would take the good seat myself.
I would sit in the passenger side because there wouldn't be a wheel in the way. So would
that's
you
actually true. Yeah, you can have a picnic. At least you've got a cup holder.
It is very confusing because, yeah, they had, you could, as fans, you could have had the lounge chair seats, or it does look like you could have had the BMW seat as well. I think you'd go for the BMW seat over comfort over a lounge chair, maybe?
Are we massively overthinking this, seeing as none of us are in Delray Beach and probably won't be faced with this scenario?
We were all indeed at work.
I would go for the BMW. I would go for the BMW if I was allowed to have aircon on, I think.
Oh, that's a really good shout.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm going to maybe just view it from home, from the telly, instead of going to Delray Beach. And talking of telly, actually, there's been quite a lot of tennis-related things coming out on the telly of late. And we've had some new news recently that Amazon Prime are going to be doing a documentary on Roger Federer and his final 12 days as a professional tennis player. We don't have a title for the documentary or too much information. Other than that, it is going to be directed by Asif Kapadia, who did the Senna documentary, the Amy Winehouse documentary, which are both, you know, very good. I've seen both and, you know, I think they're very highly rated. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting, I think, because it's actually a home video that was created that was never designed for, you know, a mass consumption viewing on Amazon Prime. And yeah, it's obviously got interviews with Rafa and the like, and I think that'll be quite an interesting watch. So we don't know more about it as of yet, but one
will
to
it,
watch
will
out
it cover that
comes.
Hubert Hurkacz
that's
match.
What I was thinking the, I don't want to see the bagel. Yes. Which retirement, Laver Cup or are we talking his professional career on the court at Wimbledon? Ooh.
Maybe both. I mean, I'd love to see the hand holding with Rafa again.
I know. It was very quick though, really, wasn't it? But I just think it will be fascinating. You can already see the way it's sort of being set out as this like tennis great struggling, you know, for form and coming to terms with the fact he won't be playing. So I think, I mean, I've seen a couple of his documentaries before and I thought they were brilliant. And the fact that this wasn't shot with an agenda also makes me think that this could be really compelling.
Bit more behind the scenes, like very candid. I think that's kind of the selling point of it. And maybe they'll go on and look at the... I still find it quite random at the Laver Cup and Ellie Goulding came out and did a song on court for Federer's like final, you know, hurrah. And it was just, yeah, quite strange. Anyway, Chris, what have you been up to in the past week? What's been floating your boat?
Well, I haven't been kind of pursuing the arts at all or kind of really looking at anything that's been happening on court. I've been focusing on a topic we've talked about previously, most recently in Madrid, which is around birthday cakes of players. So we're back there again. Sorry, listeners. But Alex de Minaur had his birthday and he looked very happy to have his birthday. I think he went out for some celebrations with Katie Poulter and his family. But then there is this picture that's doing the rounds on Twitter. And it's the mascot of the Rotterdam Open presenting him with this cake. And I've got to be honest, this cake is a wild ride.
It's like if I made a cake, I think.
Yeah, it probably is.
If we're being honest. And also, the mascot is giving me complete nightmares just being there.
The mascot's very jolly. It's like a happy face emoji. And I think he's actually really sweet, the mascot.
It's a tennis ball head.
Would you have a smiling face if you were delivering that as the birthday cake? I mean, it just looks like an absolute mess.
At least you can't see the embarrassment on his face.
Maybe it could be on The Masked Singer. It's the next. Yes. It's a character for next year.
Billie Jean King. She's already done it.
So the ABN AMRO Open Masked Singer contestant.
Is that a clue? Ooh, that.
Ooh, yeah. Could there
be a Dutch
episode?
Yannick Sinner's
Dutch
in there.
Dutch singer.
Dutch singer.
Masked dancer episode of mascots on the ATP and WTA tours.
Pitch it now, if
yes,
anyone's listening.
Why not? But going back to the cake itself, I don't think it would do well on the Great
Bake
British
off,
Bake Off.
No.
They've just sort of shoved a load of like M&Ms on the top in a bit of a pile.
And it's also, there's a picture of the mascot on the cake. And I've never given a cake with my face on to someone else, which I think is a bit off, to be honest.
Oh, I think the mascot's quite sweet.
It's a nice idea.
An emoji tennis ball head. And yeah, we'll see him on The Masked Singer next year, maybe. But I have to say, it doesn't compare to the cakes that Roland Garros used to do for Rafa's birthday with like the massive candles that would kind of set fire to the whole venue if it went a bit wrong.
Almost like fireworks.
They really went to town with those cakes. So maybe the Rotterdam need to take a leaf out of their book of cake making. But let's get on to the action on court, cake aside. Let's start in Qatar. We had the Doha WTA 1000 event. And Iga Świątek has very comfortably come through this one without dropping a set. She's claimed this one yet again. She's got such a good record at this tournament. 7-6, 6-2 victory over Elena Rybakina in the final to clinch her, another WTA 1000 event. Joel, Świątek as the champion, not a massive surprise in Doha this week, fair to say?
She seems to love playing on this tennis court. And in the final, yes, I think The start wasn't particularly great for her. I think she went 4-1 down against Rybakina. I don't think she was playing well with the conditions because they were very windy at times. But as soon as she kind of adapted her game and, you know, really kind of focused on a new approach, you know, she spoke to her team as well midway through that first set. And it just sort of, I think, corrected her. And although I think she came on the court maybe a little bit too chaotic, a little bit kind of nervous and wasn't executing the way that she would have wanted to, by the end of the match, it really was a lot better, a lot more flawless. And Rybakina, who's been one of the form players of the tour this season, probably her, Sabalenka and Świątek have shown some of the best tennis. She didn't really have an answer in that second set.
Yeah, and I mean, Świątek's won this title three times now. Twice, I think she's done it without dropping a set. So, you know, I did feel that once she got over that first set in the final, that it was kind of one-way traffic, you know, potentially. There was a bit of a weird moment, though, with Rybakina in that first set. She whacked herself on the shin, had to kind of go off and get treatment. Do you think that was a pivotal moment? Because that's kind of when it started to turn.
She was a double breakup at the time, so it does make you think that the momentum did shift because she did have to stop play to receive treatment. So that momentum was stopped. Also, it did allow kind of Iga to go and have a chat with her coaches, a little bit of a reset. I think especially if the match is getting away from you that early on and your game plan isn't working quite so well, it does allow you to almost have a chat and figure out what you can try and do a bit differently and to upset the rhythm. In terms of the injury, I mean, hitting your shin is pretty unpleasant. It didn't seem to make too much of a difference in terms of her movement. But again, it's very uncomfortable. It can knock you up. It's not something you're expecting. I mean, there was a lot of blood. It did bleed quite a lot. So it's not a fun thing to deal with. But in terms of where I think the match really did kind of shift, it's this, we keep talking about it, but it's that first serve percentage of Rybakina where it's just around 50%. And it just doesn't work if you're not serving higher percentages than that, because her big weapon is her serve. It's first strike tennis. And she wasn't able to do that enough in that second set because she wasn't making enough first serves. And that second serve was being completely eaten up by Iga Świątek, with Rybakina only winning 38% of points behind it. So it seemed like that first set would have decided the match most likely. But if Rybakina had served a bit better, you'd have to think that first set probably would have been hers.
I mean, it really should have been, I think. I think she had one set point, but it was there for the taking given the start that she had.
And she beat Świątek three times last year. So she won all of their sort of head-to-heads last season. So, you know, you've got to think what's different this time around, probably the serve. And also Świątek on this court, we know that she clearly loves playing on this court. She's had, you know, such good results in the past. So
it's a final as well, I think, because her three matches last year against Rybakina were not in finals. And actually, this was the first in their rivalry that has been in the final, not counting any of their junior matchups. So I think that might have something to do with it, because Świątek, she's got such an elite mindset, particularly in the big matches, WTA 1000 in a final. And yeah, it was just too much in the end for Rybakina.
Yeah, and just a note, Rybakina's shin, it wasn't deliberate. It was an accidental kind of hit on the follow-through.
She didn't,
do it out of anger or anything. Yeah, it wasn't a sort of...
No one injured her either.
Who whacked himself on the head and bled once. Yeah, I mean, also the semi-finalists, we had Karolina Pliskova. She got to the semis but withdrew. But she's continued her good run of form because obviously she won a title the week before. And then on the other side, kind of... on a different vein, Pavlyuchenkova reaching the semis kind of out of the blue from that section of the draw. But we know what she's capable of when she does put her game together. And Osaka also getting to the quarters here. So, you know, we're seeing her maybe making a bit more inroads than we've seen previously, you know, in the last kind of month or so.
I mean, just on that, Kim, do you think with Naomi Osaka, the fact that she has made a quarterfinal at a WTA 1000 event, are you now back on the kind of keep doing you, these high events, and not necessarily kind of dropping down and playing more kind of 250 level, given the success she's had?
I think Kim said to wait. I thought you said drop down to 125. Yeah.
He's trying to prove his that he's right. Well, I think if you look at the wins she had, she beat Garcia, she beat Petra Martic, she beat... she didn't play Serenko. Serenko actually... withdrew. So she won two matches and then came up against Pliskova and lost in two tight sets. So I think, you know, obviously that's the second time they've played this year. But I think she should continue for a bit longer. And if she really, you know, wants to be at the latter stages, obviously she does, but it's just taking a bit of extra time to get there, then I see no harm in perhaps, yeah, dropping down a notch. But I think, you know, it is still early days, and I think she's, you know, this is the deepest she's gone so far, and I'm sure with time results will come. She's too good a player for them not to, and perhaps she'll do it at, you know, the most surprising event of all. I think I randomly predicted her to win the Olympics in the summer, so we'll see
clay,
about that.
Again, just, on clay, again, we repeat, on clay.
It's all part of a very grand, larger plan.
She's peaking, yeah, on the clay courts.
Absolutely. So Iga Świątek wrapping up another title in Doha. Let's have a look at what happened in Rotterdam, apart from Alex de Minaur having his birthday cake. We did have Jannik Sinner winning the title, so another top seed winning. This, again, was fairly comfortable for Jannik Sinner for most of the week. He came up against the birthday boy in the final, but came through 7-5, 6-4 over de Minaur. So Sinner is still unbeaten this season. After winning the Australian Open, he has come into his, you know, first tournament back and won, which he actually becomes the first man since Leighton Hewitt to have won his debut event as a new Grand Slam champion. Chris, how impressed were you with Jannik Sinner this week in Rotterdam?
I think you always have questions after someone's won a slam, if they can back it up, especially with Carlos Alcaraz, and the way that we did, kind of, we made jokes about this as well, that, you know, all the different tweets you see about we're entering the Sinner era, the Alcaraz era, all of that came out last year. And then after
form in the bin era.
I mean, exactly. Like, it's hard to do. It's hard to back it up. And we've seen that from lots of players where they can reach a kind of a good level again, but it doesn't necessarily just keep going at that same trajectory. So I was very, very impressed with the way that he handled everything, because, I mean, he played some pretty tough opponents in every round. And apart from the Raonic kind of withdrawal, it's a pretty decent level of opponent, especially on indoor surfaces. It can be a bit of a leveler if someone's got a very good serve. So he did come through pretty comfortably. And I saw de Minaur play at UTS the previous week, and I thought he was playing some brilliant tennis and moving fantastically. And so I think that match is probably the one that you should take note of in terms of where his form level is at, because obviously de Minaur did take out Dimitrov and Rublev and Felix. Oh, no, not Felix. Didn't take out Felix. I'm making that up to David Goffin. But he had a very... very good run. So I think he's playing very well, and I think it's good to see, because we don't want him to kind of fall off the wagon at all at this point.
Yeah, and Alex de Minaur, you know, stayed in both of those sets. You know, he earned a break back in both of those sets, but Sinner just then, you know, able to kind of get the job done and take that break back and get the win.
That Felix match, though, we have to talk about it. Did you see Rublev versus Felix Auger-Aliassime? 3 match points in a row for Felix, and he still didn't get it.
He's
so
having
hard.
A tough Ugh. Year, isn't he? Well, it's tough hard. Last 12 months, really.
It's hard to watch. Joel, what do you think in terms of 1-2-5? Do they exist for?
Felix should drop down, yeah. Not Azarka.
I mean, for Felix, I just don't think he's had that winning feeling for so long. And it makes getting over the finish line that much more difficult. And particularly when you come up against someone as combative as Andrei Rublev, it just feels like...
Hard to put away, right?
Yeah, a tough Doesn't proposition made even tougher. And it was, yeah, a bit disappointing. But I'd just say on Alex de Minaur, I think he's really, really grown. I love the aggression he's brought to his game this season. I think before we just kind of spoke about him in terms of his coverage and that being the thing that sort of marks him out from all the other kind of players on the tour. But I think this season we've seen he's added more to his game in terms of his kind of weight of shot as well. I think it's a bit stronger. But having said that, against Jannik Sinner, it was just like, regardless of what he threw at him, Jannik Sinner was just inevitably going to come out on top. Even though it was fine margins, it still felt comfortable for Sinner.
Yeah, we also had Grigor Dimitrov getting into the semis. So again, his good run of form, his good season is continuing. And home favourite Talon Grigspor was our other semi-finalist. He came through over Hubert Hurkacz. And Hubert Hurkacz, yet more tie breaks. Every time I look at him on a score sheet, it's just tie break after tie break. I think he played 5 of 6 of his sets were tie breaks. I mean, he is like the new... I don't want to say he's the new John Isner, but
Ivo
he's
Karlovic.
Very predictable score line of his sets, isn't there? It's just, you know, kind of crazy. But Yannick Sinner, going back to him, he is now up to number 3 in the rankings. No Italian male player has ever been as high as that. So that is fantastic. Well done, Sinner. I'm sure the Carrotta boys are very, very happy.
I mean, Chris, you spoke about how Alcaraz is not having great form at the moment since, you know, since winning that Grand Slam at Wimbledon. Do you think it's a matter of time before Yannick Sinner replaces Carlos Alcaraz at number 2?
I think there's a lot of points to defend coming up. And obviously, we'll talk about it a bit later, but the Argentina Open points have obviously dropped off as well. He's got a final to back up in Rio. So I do think that Yannick Sinner is kind of cementing himself as kind of the biggest rival to Novak Djokovic, especially with that standout performance. Because if you look at it, you know, he's won the next tournament he's played after the Australian Open, and Alcaraz is still searching for a title since then. In fact, I can't even recall if he's made many finals recently at all either. I can't name one. So I think it's clear that Sinner is definitely the form player, but then I do think you have to think with Carlos Alcaraz, we did not think him coming back last season, having had the time off, that he would win his first title and then go on and win Wimbledon, especially after that semi-final run where he kind of, the nerves got to him. He was very much kind of in a state where his body just stopped working for him. No one would have predicted necessarily that he'd win that Wimbledon title. So he is someone who does prove people wrong, because he does have that sort of unbelievable talent and experience level for someone of his age. So I think hopefully he's going to put it back together. But at the same time, Yannick Sinner, you'd have to say he is the number 2 right now, if not the number 1.
Well, yeah, we've seen more of him, haven't we, than Djokovic of late. But I mean, we'll talk. I mean, Alcaraz is too good a player not to kind of come back strong. But he didn't have the best week, did he, in Buenos Aires? He didn't get the win, which we were maybe expecting. He did lose in the semifinals, which we'll get onto in just a second. Let's talk about the actual winner, though, because we had home wildcard Facundo Diaz-Acosta winning 6-3, 6-4 over Nicolas Jarry in the final. So again, another kind of surprise champion out on the golden swing. Diaz-Acosta, a player that not many people will know, will have heard of. This is his first ATP title. But previously, you know, very inexperienced, I think, really, on the court, and not really too much to go on other than the fact that he did play a very good match against Taylor Fritz at the Australian Open. So perhaps that was a hallmark of the form we would see out at the Golden Swing. Just quickly, before we do have Alina, you know, to report back on her week behind the scenes. But Chris, what do you think of Diaz-Acosta and winning this tournament? We've seen another, you know, surprise kind of winner again.
I think a lot of the Italians didn't bring, I say Italians, what am I saying? The Argentinians.
Italians, yeah.
I just was thinking of last week when an Italian won, who used to be Argentinian. But no, in terms of Argentinians, they do tend to not necessarily play their best at home. And so this is a case where not necessarily the Italian we all thought would come through did end up coming through. And I mean, he did show that he was the Italian to beat. He had very comfortable wins over Cerundolo and Correa on his way to the title. So he made the most of the opportunity. So I think that's the way I'd summarize it. You don't have to have much experience at this level. And sometimes it helps because it means that you don't have those nerves. And we saw that last week in the quarterfinal, where it's very hard when you haven't had those opportunities and you're at the end of your career, potentially, to actually get the win on the tour that you've always wanted. So He did get over the line. I think for Jarry, it probably was a case where these opportunities, having beaten Carlos Alcaraz, don't come as frequently, and he was able to play more freely. But I do think at 59 in the world, having only won, I think, 9 matches on the ATP Tour now, it feels a little bit weighted wrong in that sense. But at the same time, he made the most of his moment.
Let's hear now from our producer, Alina, who was out in Buenos Aires this week, bringing us all the behind-the-scenes action from the event. Chris caught up with Alina to hear about her experience this week.
And hello, Alina, in Argentina. You'll be pleased to know I've been practicing. I'm saying buenas tardes to you in Buenos Aires.
Just listen to that, Chris. You actually got it right. Congrats. It sounds like you're so ready for the finals day. The Spanish is right. The vibe is right.
Everything is going right. And things that are also going right, you found the perfect position. You're in the right spot there. You're in a lovely commentary box, I think.
I'm having probably the best view in the house right now, just waiting for the doubles finals to start here.
And has it been that sort of treatment all week? Has it been VIP treatment at the IEB Argentina Open?
To be honest, the treatment has been like this all week. Many thanks to the Tenium team. They've been so awesome and took us backstage. We got to actually see what's happening and see the players' lounge and bumped into some players as well that were quite in their element.
Were they expecting you, Alina?
They were not expecting me or the press members to be right
up in
there.
The locker room.
Exactly. While they were taking their clay shoes off, they were just like, what are you doing here?
Did you ask them any questions? Take the opportunity?
No, I just waved to Jari and that felt like very intrusive. I was like, hi, sorry to bother you.
It is a rare opportunity. You get very close to the players and players in very different sort of settings. So last time we were talking DJ sets with Dusan Lajovic, and has Carlos Alcaraz made an appearance on the decks so far this week?
Surprisingly not. We didn't see Charlie, as they call him here, to our surprise. Charlie. I was like, who's Charlie? And it took me a second to figure out that is his actually South American nickname. So we haven't seen DJ Charlie the entire week.
Charlie Alcaraz. That doesn't sound right, does it? Vamos Charlie. I feel like it feels like maybe we're in, I don't know, we're in the
it's
UK.
Exotic.
You know, Charlie. But unfortunately for Charlie, he did get eliminated last night, which was not in the script. It was not what anyone predicted. He was the number one seed. He was the defending champion, the tournament headliner. And Alcaraz was knocked out in straight sets by Nicolas Jarry. You were courtside for that match. What happened?
It was so unexpected. It seemed like it took him a while to actually understand that things are not going his way and they're not going to go his way.
And from a match perspective, it did feel like he wasn't necessarily taking the chances like he normally did. He didn't convert as you would expect. He was playing very defensively. And I had to say, kind of from you being courtside, was it that Jarry just had a fantastic game plan that got him through that match? Or was Alcaraz maybe not playing his best?
We spoke with Jarry in press before, and he did mention that it's super important for him to be very focused in the match. He showed up with a strategy and he executed on it flawlessly.
He took his chance, and there was a rare kind of show of frustration from Carlos Alcaraz. What happened there?
Yeah, it was right about the time where he figured that things are not going his well, that the signs of frustration started to show. And for me, it was like really rare to see that kind of frustration from Carlos, just throwing the racket off the court towards his box. It was really strange sight for him because the smiles were gone and we could see that he's really getting super frustrated.
Was that aimed at coach Juan Carlos Ferreira, do you think? Do you think there's trouble in paradise in that partnership?
Oh, gee, I hope not. I think he was just up in his head and threw it in the direction he could have the most space to. But yeah, it was quite a throw. It was really hard to watch, honestly.
And I think a lot of people thought that maybe this wouldn't be as competitive as it was. You know, he was playing against Echeverri on one leg and stumbled through that one. Were you surprised by this result in the end?
Honestly, everybody was. By the end of the match, the crowd was still standing, almost like waiting for the third set to happen. It was really surprising because nobody expected Jarry to show so well, especially after the match with Tommy Echeverri.
But on the Argentinian subject, we did have an all-Argentinian semi-final and we have an Argentinian in the final.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Argentinian slam, as I call it. We had 8 Argentinians in the draw and we have one Argentinian in the final. We have Facundo Diaz Acosta. He's, I think, quite a talent and I will keep an eye on him going forward.
Okay, he's a name for us to remember. For those of our listeners who haven't heard of him, he's 23. He has a career high ranking of 87. Mostly he's been playing on the Challenger circuit. Some of our listeners may be familiar with him because he did push Taylor Fritz to 5 sets at the Australian Open. And Alina, something that we do every time we're on tour, we do peak pit pleasant surprise. And so that's the best bit, the worst bit, and something that surprised you that you actually rather enjoyed. But shall we start with your peak?
Gabriela Sabatini was here, the queen herself.
The queen of Argentina.
Yes, and actually that's how they call her here, La Reina.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was like, it's the queen of tennis. And they were like, yeah, La Reina está aquí. So yeah, she looks incredible. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if she like just picked up a racket and like jump on the court and show the guy some moves. She is in such tremendous form and she looks absolutely gorgeous.
Clearly, she's still got it.
She's got it, 100%. And then we have a pleasant...
Your pleasant surprise?
Yeah.
Oh no, we have the pit. We never want to finish on a pit.
Okay, let's go with a pit. Oh, that was a... That's a tough one because everything around here has been incredible. But I believe that I wished Cam Norrie had more words for me when I asked him a question, as he had less words for me than sets he played. Let's put it that way.
So it was a... It was a less than 3-word answer.
Yeah.
So that's not exactly a generous answer in the press room. Can I push you? What did you ask him?
Well, I asked him about his tremendous form he had in Melbourne and whether he's looking to bringing that into the clay season. And we definitely like missed that in the match he had. And I wanted to know more.
Quite punchy. Hello.
Yes. Yeah. Hello. I was there for business.
Where was your good play?
Yeah. Yeah, he was not super excited, but to be fair, he was not super excited overall. He was really upset about his match and the way he played, and even the set he won, he was not happy about it. So overall, yeah.
You maybe caught him in a bad time, so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt there, and then bring us home, Alina, with your pleasant surprise.
Oh, a pleasant surprise. How can we forget the train, Chris? The train.
The train! Tell our listeners, this is, you have to see it to believe. We'll post on our social channels, but it really is extraordinary.
So on the short side of the court, there's, I think it's like an intercity train that passes every 30 minutes. But what I noticed that it tends to pass on a player's service all the time. And while it passes, it also honks at the crowd. So it becomes this whole thing.
And it's literally on the top of the court.
Yeah.
It's... Can you feel it shaking when it comes past?
You don't feel it shaking because I'm always seated on the opposite side, but you definitely hear it and it makes noise and it's just like there. You cannot miss it.
You do have to check this out because it's a tennis court like no other, but maybe one of the best views possible on a train could be going through that on your way through Argentina.
Imagine passing, being in that train, passing on a night session. I think that the view must be...
Like, is that Carlos?
Yeah.
Is that Charlie?
Is that Charlie?
Charlie's there. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for that. Very well done on the three Ps. And the golden swing continues. You will not be following it, but you have been following it very, very closely. You've seen all of the tennis on display. Who have you got your eye on for the rest of the golden swing?
Oh, you know, you got me there. You know my eyes.
I know where this is going.
You know that I have my eyes on Thiago Monteiro. He is a Brazilian player. He is entering Rio. I think he got a wild card. Is that correct?
He is. And in the first round, who is he playing? He's playing none other than Charlie Alcaraz. So who's going to win that match?
Oh, that'll be a tough call.
Three sets?
Let's hope for a three sets.
Are you booking a flight?
I would go straight to Rio to see that encounter.
And Alina, it's time that we would say adios and hasta luego to Buenos Aires. It's been wonderful following your updates from Argentina, and we really hope you enjoy the final.
Thank you so much, Chris. I will see you guys soon at probably a clay tennis tournament in a warm country somewhere. And I will leave you with Chris, Joel, and Kim for the latest updates from the tour.
Just on Alcaraz, what do we think is going wrong there? Because, I mean, Nicolas Jarry, that match, that semi-final, he should not be losing that, really.
No, he shouldn't. I really don't think he should be. And it's quite frustrating because it just feels like he's getting it wrong at the key moments. And sometimes it comes very naturally to people. But, I mean, he's been losing to some pretty good players, but players that he wasn't losing to this time last year.
He's lost his invincibility, it feels like.
I think a lot of players would see him in the draw. And if you're going to get a top four seed, I think you'd rather play Carlos Alcaraz right now than a Medvedev or a Sinner or a Djokovic. So I think in that match, it's too many unforced errors. It's not taking your chances. In terms of break points, he didn't take all the chances he could have. And I think it's allowing players to hit him off the court. And even someone like Medvedev at the US Open, who doesn't traditionally hit people off the court and stands very far back, was still able to hit Alcaraz off the court there. So,
do you think he's having that problem at the moment? Because Jarry, he has that power and that ability, and he did bring it all together, I think, in that semi-final. And Alcaraz, it doesn't feel like at the moment he has really a game plan for someone who is a big hitter from the back of the court. What does he do about it? Because he sort of goes into his shell a little bit, and yeah, he might hit one or two eye-catching winners, but at the end of the day, the result is a loss for him. And I think, you know, it's not just this Jarry result. I think there's been a few other defeats he's had where it's been a similar situation of that power and sort of being a little bit powerless to do anything about it.
He's not starting on the front foot and taking control of the match and playing on his terms. And I think that makes it very difficult for you to come through and to come through easily. It does remind me a little bit of when he won that US Open where all of his matches went to five sets because his serve wasn't quite doing as well. And maybe it's a case, I mean, in this match, his serve wasn't getting the job done in the same way. So if he doesn't have that sort of really big weapon, as you say, he kind of relies on some of that shot making. And that's hard to do every single point in every single game that you play. So I think it's a question that I was going to put to you, and maybe I'll put to Kim. He's had a fantastic run with Juan Carlos Ferreira. We did talk about the fact there was that racket throw. Mm. Do you think that maybe there should be some new blood introduced into the training camp, some new differing opinions there? I'm not saying sack your coach, but I am saying it's not been the trajectory you'd have expected from what was expected to be the start of a fantastic run for him.
I think it'd be a bit rash to, yeah, remove Ferreira from the setup. They have a very, very strong relationship, you know, bit father and son-like. And I think bringing someone else in it to consult would be useful. That would probably be the way to go for now. And if that also, you know, didn't help, then maybe you'd look...
Well, Tom Hill's free,
further,
isn't he?
Further back. Tom Hill is free. He's no longer with Sakkari. That broke in the last week. I mean, Tony Nadal could... perhaps consult, just throwing that out there. But yeah, I would like to see them stay together. I really like their kind of coaching dynamic. But, you know, at some point, if it doesn't carry on working, then he might have to accept that, yeah, Ferrero got me so far. Now it's time to kind of spread my wings. So that could be a route to go down. Before we go for a break, let's just quickly touch upon the Delray Beach Open. The final has now finished. Taylor Fritz has won 6-2, 6-3 over Tommy Paul. So Battle of the Americans has come out with Fritz coming through top seed.
Was there anyone in the BMW, though, watching courtside?
They actually drove off. They were supporting Tommy Paul.
Oh, dear. They took the lady with the funny sort of lampshade with them. But yeah, Taylor Fritz is the champion. Yeah, he hasn't dropped a single set at this event. It's been quite straightforward for him coming through against, you know, Giron, Hijikata, Nuno Borges to clinch this title finally after all of the delays. Joel, any thoughts on the week for Fritz at the Delray Beach event?
Yeah, I think, I mean, he's just building on a very decent start to the season. I mean, he got to the quarterfinals in the Australian Open, first event after that, now champion in Delray Beach. I think this will be very comfortable and very you know, familiar to him in terms of his surroundings on an American hard court. And, you know, picking up a very decent win against Tommy Paul, who's been in some very good form over the last 2 weeks, has made two finals, won a title last week, and... yeah, it just shows, I think, with Fritz that he is playing some very good tennis at the moment, probably in a similar vein to, I think, Alex Dumanor. And you know, he'll be looking to kind of kick on from this and, you know, maybe make the most of it and see how far he can go up the rankings, because, you say, he's building on a decent start to the season. And I'm kind of curious to know where it might take him.
Well, final result from the week that's gone. Just the British news in the Delray Beach doubles final. Julian Cash of Great Britain with his American partner Robert Galloway won the doubles event, beating in the final Neil Skupski, fellow Brit, and his partner Santiago Gonzalez. So that's Julian Cash and Robert Galloway's first ATP title together as a pair. And yeah, Julian Cash, don't normally see him picking up titles on the ATP tour in the doubles, or, you know, so well done him. But let's take a very quick break now. We'll be back in the second half to look at whether single-handed backhands are disappearing from the men's game, should the Australian Open switch the ladies final to a Sunday, and we'll also be looking at all the tennis to come this week, including Dubai, Rio and Doha. So do not go anywhere.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work.
You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast. Now we're going to move on to a bit of a par for the courts, back and forth, I think. Joel, you've got one designed for me and Chris this week.
I've stored this up ever since the Australian Open, so I've been very excited to let
You've been very patient, Joel.
To let this loose, exactly that.
It might not be completely relevant at this moment, but we're going to do it.
It might not be, and I can't give you more context because it probably gives some obvious answers away. So, ooh. I'm just going to get straight into
it. It's like a mysterious path of the court. It's not a mysterious player.
Well, I'm going to talk about the fact that we talk about it all the time. You know, one slam wonders on the women's circuit. This is a very, 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 very popular topic, I think, on the Tennis Weekly podcast. So, naturally, I'm going to ask you to name, in this edition of Path of the Courts, one slam wonders in the open era on the male side. And there are 27 in total.
Oh my goodness.
And there's 11 since the year 2000. So there are some good names in there that you and probably our listeners will be very familiar with. Some maybe unfamiliar names. But yeah, I am looking for male one slam wonders in the open era.
Oh gosh, okay. Not sure my knowledge of one slam wonders from the 80s is going to be very good, but
I'm just going to go for the easy ones, Kim, today. It's one of those days.
Okay, let's do this. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Why not?
Okay. Wait, gentlemen first.
I mean, I should have offered, shouldn't I?
No, it's fine. Don't worry. You go first. It gives me more time to think.
Well, I mean, this could be very embarrassing, but I think this is right. And we just talked about him. I'm going to go for Juan Carlos Ferrero.
That is correct, yes. 2003.
I suddenly thought,
French
has he won
Open
twice?
Marin Cilic.
Correct, yes. 2014 US Open.
I mean, I've got to go for Dominic Thiem then.
That is a correct answer. US Open in 2020.
Juan Martín Del Potro.
Another winner at the US Open, that is correct, 2009.
We may as well just complete the set with Andy Roddick then.
Correct, yes.
Daniil Medvedev.
Very good, Kim, yes. 2021 US Open. Equal scores at the moment.
Gets a little bit tougher now. I'm going to go for someone who has talked about a lot. I think... Thomas Johansson, I'm going to say.
That is a correct answer, yes. 2002 Australian Open.
I'll say the most recent one, Jannik Sinner.
I was waiting for someone to say that. yes, Jannik Sinner is a correct answer. 2024 Australian Open.
I thought it was an unspoken rule, Kim. You know, we were just going to leave that one. Oh, the one
I was like
was
wondering
Sinner.
When did they say this and I forget that. But yeah, Jannik Sinner is on the list.
Maybe we both thought that we'd said it. I think
Chris is under pressure here.
Someone
I think,
from
Kim.
Wimbledon. I'm going to go for Richard Krajicek.
Correct. That is a very good answer.
I don't know why I said that.
From the 90s.
I should have gone for the more obvious one.
1996, yes, Wimbledon.
Goran Ivanišević.
That's what I should have gone for.
I was expecting you to go for Chris, but that is correct. Yes, Kim. 2001 Wimbledon. I still haven't gotten over him beating Tim Henman in that semi-final, but yes.
Oof, this gets tricky now. I don't think they won another one, so I'm going to say Carlos Moya.
That is a correct answer. Yes, 1998 French Open.
So I keep forgetting who won this title because it was not the person that I think was the favourite going into it. But I think Gaston Gaudiot, he won the French Open before Rafa.
Oh, Kim. That is a cracking answer. Yes, Gaston Gaudiot.
Against Courier, yeah.
Very good. 2004. 2004 French Open. I think Courier also beat Tim Henman in the semi-finals as well.
I think he poor did. Yeah.
Get there. Oh, yeah.
Poor everyone.
There is one player. There is one more player, one male slam wonder post 2000 that no one has got, which you were doing very, very well on that front.
Post 2000. Goodness.
Blimey.
But there is also a lot of names from the 70s, 80s and 90s.
Okay.
So might come
what
back to this
knowledge.
What
happened before Roger Federer?
I'm trying to think of the 2000s. I can't think of anybody. Must be someone recent. I'm going to go for Michael Chang.
Very good. Correct answer. 1989 French Open. Kim, the pressure is on you.
So many of these. I think a 50-50 whether they've won one or two.
I wonder if that other one post 2000 is also at the French Open, but I just can't think of...
If it's a Spaniard, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking Wimbledon before Federer. I'm going to go for Michael Stich.
Michael Stich is a correct answer.
Oh,
yes.
Kim,
Wimbledon 1991. This is tense. This is getting tense.
This is a good game.
Still equal. And still quite a few answers left on the board.
I think I've got two potentials. I'm going to say the legend, the most streamed man in tennis. I'm going to say for Yannick Noah.
That is a very good guess, and it's a very good answer because it's a correct answer. 1983, Roland Garros. Kim, you need this to draw level with Chris.
I think she's got it. She's looking
no,
confident.
I mean, the only other players I think have won multiple. I'm just bemused about this recent 2000 person.
We do very badly at recent tennis. We could talk about them on the pod and we forget them.
Kim, I'm going to have to pressure you for an answer.
Any clues? Like
no,
any slams
I can't
or
give you any clues.
What about that Italian?
What Italian?
Didn't another Kim? Italian win a slam?
Oh, Ilie Nastasi. There we go. That's
Italian.
Not right.
Famous Italian.
Yeah.
Ilie Nastasi is an incorrect answer, Kim.
I think
no.
Kim not gave correct. Up on that one.
I was
gone
thinking
on too
Mark
long.
Philippoussis, but he got to a final, didn't he? But he didn't win. Yeah.
Not
he
Mark Philippoussis. Any other guesses? Any other answers?
I had Peter Korda.
Peter Korda, yep, very good. Oh. 1998 Australian Open.
That was a backup. And then the only other one I had was Pat Cash, which I'm
very
not,
good.
Not
oh, very
sure.
good, yep. Pat yeah. Cash on the list. 1987 Wimbledon.
Who won in the... That 2000s.
Well, I'm going to get to that in a sec. I'm just going to go through some of the answers
just
you didn't give
order.
Me.
Yeah.
Yes, from the 70s. You could have had Andrés Gimeno. I think I'm saying that right. 1972 French Open. Manuel Orantes, 1975.
Joel, you remember
US
that.
Open.
That? You were born then.
Oh, of
you?
Course, yeah. Exactly. Mark Edmondson, 1976 Australian Open.
You're just saying names.
Adriano Panatta.
That's the one, the Italian.
Oh, yeah, they
yes.
named the court after him.
Roscoe Tanner, Vitas Gerulaitis.
Oh, maybe that's who I meant when I said
Gerulaitis. Sounds like a disease.
Brian Teacher, 1980 Australian Open. Not too familiar with me. It might be familiar with our listeners. Yes, Yannick Noah, Pat Cash, Andres Gomez, 1990 French Open, Michael Stich. A name you didn't get, Thomas Muster.
Oh.
French Open, 1995.
Slipped through the net.
Yeah, you said all the others apart from one name. Richard Krajicek, Petr Korda, Carlos Moya, Goran Ivanisevic, Thomas Johansson, Juan Carlos Ferrero, Andy Roddick, Gaston Gaudio. Juan Martín Del Potro, Marin Cilic, Dominic Thiem, Daniil Medvedev, Yannick Sinner, and the player you did not mention, 2002 French Open champion.
Oh,
was it the other Johansson or?
No.
No.
Albert Costa.
Alberto Costa.
Albert Sorry, Costa Albert was Costa. The name. I was wondering if
Is it
knew.
Albert or Alberto?
I think it is actually just Albert.
Is it Albert? I got Albert Costa written down. So, yes.
Like
I don't know. That was tough. But very good. Very good path of the courts there, I thought.
That was very good. Thanks, Joel.
That was very competitive.
Let's have a look. Well, I mean, listeners, let us know how you did, because did you get Costa?
And do you know who Brian Teacher is? Let us know.
I'm gonna know after this episode.
Going to go look him up. Tracy has got in touch with us on Twitter for our mailbag this week. Tracy, thanks very much for getting in touch. I will just read out what Tracy's asked us. Hi, Tennis Weekly. With Stefanos Tsitsipas now out of the top 10, it means there are no single-handed backhands at the very top of the men's game. Why do you think that this is? So Tracy's gone technical. But yeah, it is true. There is a very good graph that does demonstrate the decline of single-handed backhands over the years from, well, throughout the Open era, really. And we do have zero in the top 10 at the moment on the men's side. So, Chris, let's come to you first. Why do you think this is? Do you miss the single-handed backhand?
That's a steady decline. I do miss it, but at the same time, from a technical perspective, I do think that it makes sense that it is in decline, because when you see just how big these rackets are, just how much power and topspin you can get on the ball, it does leave that single-handed backhand very much exposed. And I think that's probably the biggest reason, because you can't get the same amount of topspin, and it's very hard to deal with the topspin in the same way. So we've seen this recently with like Tsitsipas on the return. He has to chip it back quite often because it's very hard when it bounces high to deal with it. And the classic one that we've seen this time and time again was that backhand was targeted relentlessly by Nadal, especially in some of their early clashes. And that actually led to the forehand breaking down at times. But the backhand, the height of the ball you can get, especially on clay, does cause a lot of problems there. So I think it's a shot which does lend itself to the highlights reel. But at the same time, I do think that despite the fact you can do more with the ball with a single hander, you are also under a lot more pressure with it.
Yeah, it feels like we're now in an era where power is more important than ever, speed is more important than ever, weight of shot is more important than ever, and that just does not lend itself, I think, to having a single-handed backhand. I am maybe a little bit surprised, I think, given, as I say, I feel like there's a lasting legacy of, you know, the single-handed backhands of, like, Roger Federer. I see Richard Gasquet and you know, Dominic Thiem as well, Stan Wawrinka. And I do wonder, you know, kids watching those, some of them got to be inspired to be like, right, I'm going to have a single-handed backhand, because when they are in full flight, they look, you know, they look majestic and they do look beautiful.
We've got Massetti, Joel.
We've got Massetti, yeah. And I mean, we did have, or maybe we might have in the future, Denis Shapovalov as well, who's, you know, was maybe talked about as getting into the top 10. But yeah, I just think from a kind of practical point of view, the way the game has gone, it's just not a conductive environment to have a single-handed backhand in. And I think Tsitsipas is probably the most obvious example of that, because you just feel like whenever he has a matchup against a very, you know, top player, they're just going to pepper his backhand side, and inevitably at some point it's going to break down.
Yeah, well, it's the first time in ATP rankings history that there isn't one, but like you said, I'm sure it will only be a matter of time that we might get another one entering the top 10, but just, yeah, just very much the minority.
Dimitrov might be back very soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way he's going. Let's have a look at the other thing that broke this week, was that the Australian Open are considering switching the women's final to a Sunday from 2026, possibly. So they'd be doing a switcheroo of the women's and men's final, to having the men on the Saturday and the women on the Sunday. I think they've kind of sort of said that the rationale for this is that the men's final obviously went super late. People kind of had to work the next day, so it kind of, you know, not as many people got to watch the finale of Sinner coming back against Medvedev. So by switching it round, you know, best of both worlds, everyone gets to watch everything, in a general sense, of course. What do you make of this? Are they doing this for the right reason?
That's the thing I have. I think it makes sense from a TV ratings point of view, but if it does happen, I almost feel like just come out and say that, as opposed to kind of maybe dressing it up as, equality and want to make the women's match the main event. Because I think if you come out like that, I think, you know, hearing kind of the stuff around the TV ratings, it's a little bit kind of like, is it really? Or is it just kind of like you just want to maximize your audience as much as possible?
Yeah, I think I agree with that in terms of if it is just because, you know, it runs shorter, that's not exactly a great advertisement for women's tennis, is it?
Put it on a Sunday because people shut off earlier because they got work the next day.
Exactly. And that does kind of make you a bit concerned that the tournament will almost start packing up on a Saturday and maybe the women's final won't get the attention that it deserves. I'm not saying it's the warm-up act for the men's final, but it is still very much when the tournament has all eyes on it. And you wouldn't want that to be at the detriment of the kind of faux equality in this sense, that women wouldn't get the same platform or the same spotlight that they have done previously. I think it's an interesting concept. I think it's more interesting if you swap it for a night match and you see what happens there, as opposed to, you know, having it in this way where we're kind of pretending that this isn't just because the Australian Open has a scheduling issue.
No, I agree. And let's have a look. We'll have to see if they do that or not. At the moment, it's kind of just rumoured, so it's not definite. Let's have a look at what's happening this week. We are out in the Middle East in Dubai for the WTA 1000 event there. So Świątek will be looking to do a double in the Middle East with claiming another title there. We do also have Sabalenka, the Australian Open champion, back in action. That has already got underway. Sadly, we have seen, I think, Paula Badosa retire from her match.
Again.
It was sad. Did you see the Instagram story post she put up? It was she put up before the match, and then she had to retire after the first set in her first. Yeah, not great injury situation there at the moment.
And Kudermetova and Yastremska having a very odd scoreline today. Six.
Chris,
love.
You were salivating.
1-6, 6-love.
You were salivating at this result.
I honestly love these sorts of results because I can actually give you an interesting sort of highlight. Well, interesting to some people maybe, but the match was 6-love, 1-6, 6-love, and it's the first time that only six games have been dropped in a main draw at a WTA match since Kudermetova in Beijing against Serenko. So she's got a habit of it. If she's gonna, she's on or she's off, put it that way.
Bagel, breadstick, bagel. I love it.
We'll have to see if Świątek will be opening her bakery this
Not
week.
Against Sloan, please, no.
We do also have the ATP 500 out in Rio. Carlos Alcaraz will be hoping he goes a bit better there than he did in Buenos Aires. Kaminori in action as well. So this was the title that he won last year, wasn't it, Nori? So be hoping for better this week. And we also have Doha, which is an ATP 250. Rafa is not playing. We had previously heard he might be coming back, but he's not. He's still at home in Mallorca. But Andrei Rublev is the top seed there with Khachanov, the second seed. Ugo Humbert is the third seed. Maybe he won a title last week, didn't he? So
Kim, it's now or never. Andy Murray in this draw. He has a qualifier in the first round, Alexandre Muller. He's got an incredible record against Frenchmen. So it's got to happen. It's got to happen. I'm praying. I'm hoping.
I've got everything crossed.
Yeah, we hope he has a better result this week. So it's not been great, has it, for Andy recently. And finally, Los Cabos, also an ATP 250 out in Mexico. Zverev is top seeding there with Tsitsipas, Ruud and Alex de Minaur in attendance. So
Jack Draper.
Jack Draper also in action. The power Draper. Up against Kokkinakis first round. That could be quite an interesting opener.
Yeah, could also face Evans in round two. So we'll see how that goes. But very, very interesting stuff there. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. A quick reminder, thank you to everyone who has filled in the Tennis Weekly survey over the last week or so. We've really enjoyed reading some of the comments and getting some of the learnings. The survey is still open. The link is in the description. So if you would like to help us improve the show, make sure to fill out the Tennis Weekly survey. It literally takes about 3 minutes. It doesn't require any sort of sign up, but it will be very, very helpful to us. So if you can do that, please do that. But we're going to end it there. As I said, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Massive shout out as well to Alina for going out to the Golden Swing at the Buenos Aires event and reporting back for us on Charlie Alcaraz and all things Buenos Aires. But listeners, remember to subscribe to us. Stay up to date on all the action from the ATP and WTA tours.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. So if you like what you're hearing, then do make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media and you can see all the action from the IEB Plus Argentina Open. You can email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X. And the handle for our social channels is Tennis Weekly Pod. You can also purchase our lovely Tennis Weekly merch at etsy.com/shop/tennisweeklypodcast. You can email us at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or do check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next Monday at Tennis Weekly HQ. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.